Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to another exciting adventure on Radio Wasteland, the best damn paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So I just want to start by reading a headline I saw because it's a perfect encapsulation of the general sort of 2020 oeuvre. The headline was, quote, "Invasive murder hornets seen for the first time in the U.S., researchers say." This was referring to the Asian giant hornets, which were recently spotted in Washington State, an insect many in my generation were already familiar with because they were featured in a popular 2011 Cracked article about the most horrifying animals in our world. These creatures can penetrate a beekeeper's suit with a single sting, can kill a healthy human with multiple stings, and are the approximate length of a small mouse. It is currently unknown why they are in the U.S. or how they got here. So, if you needed added incentive not to leave your home, there it is. Also worth noting, these hornets have only one predator, the honey buzzard, and it doesn't exist in the United States. Japan's defense ministry announced plans to drop protocols for responding to, reporting, and recording encounters with UFOs after the U.S. Defense Department released their UFO videos. Defense Minister Taro Kono said that self-defense forces pilots have never encountered UFOs, but that it wouldn't hurt to prepare for the possibility. And finally, an area roughly the size of Delaware is burning in Russia right now. In large part, this is because of the very abnormally warm spring, which has started a number of blazes. This is also because of the huge number of people fleeing the urban areas in Russia to the countryside in order to escape coronavirus lockdown. This influx of people have reportedly been ignoring fire safety rules, according to Russian news, at the same time that the economic slowdown makes it nigh impossible to actually fight these fires. Back to you, Chauncey.
Okay, I got to start out by asking, what does oeuvre mean?
Oeuvre. Like, it's like the milieu.
Okay. All right, so murder hornets, Asian murder hornets, and African killer bees. It automatically makes me wonder if when our stuff goes over there, are they just all like, you know, hordes of American death kittens or like, you know, is like, do we get those names over there or do we just label other countries' stuff as being terrible? You
know? Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like horrible animals that only exist in the U.S.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It's hard to say because, yeah, mountain lions, I guess, which I guess are pretty terrifying.
Right. If they had herds of flying mountain lions over there, they'd probably give them some terrible death as well. It'll bite right through your lion suit.
I think it's a funny headline just in terms of how unexpectedly horrifying it is.
Right.
It's like when you turn on your computer, you go to read the newspaper, and a hand just reaches out of your screen and just slaps you right across the face. That's right. What this headline is like. And I do appreciate that in my news.
And I wonder how they got here. You know, did they accidentally get shipped, or did warming climates make it so they could fly across shorter landmass areas, or
I don't know if bees can fly across the Pacific. I mean, I guess they can stop at islands and stuff.
You'd have to get really lucky.
Yeah, I just don't know what the... Right, because it's not like they have maps.
They don't know.
I guess I don't know what the maximum, like, flight distance of a bee is. I assume it's pretty large, because they weigh about as much as 4 paperclips.
But like a fly, you know, like a fly in its fly state lives for like 40 hours, you know, so...
That's true.
You know, it's like, even if they could make it, it's like, could they make it in their lifespan? When they got here, would they still be, you know, breeding ready? Or would it, you know,
That's a good point. There's a lot of things that are unclear about the Asian murder hornets.
All right. That's fair.
To be clear, the moniker murder hornets, it didn't actually come from the news. It came from researchers who saw this, that this thing existed and were just rightfully horrified. Entomologists were horrified. They're like, wow, these things will kill you.
Right. Well, the Asians made it, you know.
That's true.
I mean, they're still alive and kicking.
Yeah. First coronavirus, now murder hornets.
Right.
What do they have against us?
Right. The next
retaliation for the trade war.
Totally, man.
Totally. We thought that they were going to retaliate economically, but they were just like, how do you feel about bees?
Yeah. Oh, they probably came, you know, like the Wuhan virus, they probably came from Beijing, you know.
I'm just reacting to those puns.
It was off the top of my head. I didn't have a lot to work with.
Punch in the gut, those puns.
Japanese haven't seen any UFOs, but they're willing to look now because we've put out our UFO footage.
Yeah.
You know, this hadn't crossed my mind. This is a topic that we've covered a lot. I'm sure a lot of UFO-y people have covered this a lot. But it never crossed my mind that we would be the leaders
right.
by putting this information out and that other countries.
Yeah, which we kind of are.
Right. That other countries might be all, oh, well, now we're not embarrassed. We're going to tell you what we know about Rendlesham, or we're going to tell you what we know about, you know, the trees being flattened in Siberia and all sorts of other things. You know, it's like we might have started something good here.
I think good things can only come out of this disclosure, like unless they're lying or something, right? You know, unless they falsified the videos for, I don't know, some nefarious purpose. I can't think of what that would be. Just in case they need a distraction at some point.
They're all, yeah, that was a recruitment video we ended up not using.
Right. But assuming these videos are like legit, which we think they are, then yeah, I think it's a very good thing that they're out there.
And then a Delaware-sized bird in Russia. Okay, this makes me think of a couple things. It makes me think that the Russians are having a larger problem with COVID than they're leading on.
Certainly, yes.
Which I think we all kind of assume that.
Yeah.
It also means that Russia might get a little more involved in caring about the environment than they have in the past. You know, because some of these countries, it's like they're either so big or so dismissive of their people that they don't do anything about it. And, you know, the three that I can think of are China, Russia, and Brazil, you know, that just seem to kind of skirt this off. You know, they like to put on the mask and pretend that they're on board. But,
well, certainly Brazil's current leader, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Past leaders have been very concerned about climate change in Brazil. But I think it's interesting in Russia because Russia is an oil state, right? And so a big part of the reason that they can't respond is because of this thing with Russia and Saudi Arabia.
Right.
That caused the oil industry to basically fall apart worldwide. Right. So I would hope that both that and like these ensuing wildfires would serve as a wake up call to Russia that, hey, you can't just be an oil economy anymore. That is a recipe for disaster, but who knows?
Yeah, and even dictators have babies, you know? It's like, what's your problem, man? Got to get in there. Even oligarchs. I mean, if you're an oligarch, you know, you have a family. Your family's supposed to be important to you, and your babies are making babies, you know? So
you got to do something. Yeah, I think they assume that their kids are going to live in air-conditioned bunkers, you know? That they're going to be fine and everyone else is going to die.
No. They're probably right.
Yeah, they are probably right about that. I mean, at least for a while.
Right. All right, you are listening to Radio Wasteland, and coming up next, we have Jake Hinton discussing with us intelligent design, which I found to be incredibly interesting. I went into intelligent design thinking it was a religious discussion, and it is not. And so I was a little blown away by the information that I learned there. So you're listening to Radio Wasteland. Come on back for some of that.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that with proper care and just a little discipline should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomforts. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/radiowasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Jake Hinton. And Jake is a friend of mine, for full disclosure. And, you know, Jake and I, we're odd friends because we're very opposite in a lot of ways, you know. But we're good friends in the sense that we both are willing to agree to disagree. I like to put it that way. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's actually more healthy to get other people's opinions and listen to your friends and share mutual respect and share ideas. If you can't share ideas, then
right,
you know, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, how's the world going to change? So Jake and I, through our conversations, quite often have had discussions on science and the origin of, not science in general, but the origin of everything, because Jake is coming from a Christian perspective of religion, where I'm coming from a agnostic perspective, a perspective of, I don't know, I'm just going to listen to scientists. Okay, so intelligent design. So let's, let me try to pull this around to that.
Okay.
So science believes that we can track basically not everything, but the basic idea of how energy and matter has moved throughout the universe all the way back to about like 13 seconds or 1/13 of a second after the Big Bang. We don't know what the universe looked like prior to that, but that's how far back they go. So I think for the sake of argument, I'm not going to go before the Big Bang.
Okay.
You know, because I mean, who knows? But in intelligent design, why don't you huck me an example and I will see if I think that represents intelligent design, because, you know, science in general, I say we, like I'm a scientist, but I'm representing that side here. You know, we look at it like, that everything is bumping around, mm-hmm. you know? So.
Yeah. So
what would your opening argument to that be?
The opening argument to everything just bumping around?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess what I would say is there's really, and this is the part that is shockingly simple to me, that there's really only three working theories to the origin of life question. Theory one is what's called the chance hypothesis. Theory two is called the necessity hypothesis. Theory three is the intelligent design hypothesis. So those are your three options as far as most origin of life scientists are concerned. Those are the only three.
It sounds like I'm coming from number one, which is chance.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like number two would really kind of be intelligent design too.
No, so I'll explain each one. So the chance hypothesis, you already understand. It's the whole bouncing around.
Mm-hmm.
and life coming out of that. I'll talk about intelligent design too. So it's a really simple one. The intelligent design hypothesis says that something intelligent created the first life.
Mm-hmm.
Necessity hypothesis would be some law-like force. So for an example, magnets stick to my fridge. It's
right.
That's a force.
Yeah.
And so the necessity argument, and you could say that, yeah, there's some chance involved in the necessity argument, but basically necessity argument says that there's laws at play within the universe
right.
that cause all these things to happen, and it was inevitable. It had to happen based on the laws that are observed.
In order for there to be a universe.
Well, so specifically like those three are for the first life, original.
Right, but the second one, the necessity, it's like if we didn't have the electromagnetic force, the universe wouldn't exist the way that we see it. And
totally,
so necessity is basically saying if there isn't life, then we wouldn't see it. Like there's a lot of people like going around like talking about how consciousness defines reality, therefore mm-hmm. life would be necessary for reality to exist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's pretty philosophically deep.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not ready to go there. So I'm looking at
So here's a super good example.
See, the third one is the one that just doesn't make sense to me, though.
The necessity hypothesis. A good way to explain that is like a salt crystal. So before we get too deep into it, like most evolutionists believe that. So we're humans. And due to random chance variations occurring in DNA, we come from apes.
Right.
And so those apes came from some lesser life form and lesser and lesser and lesser and lesser until the point where you get to the first cell. And even the first cell is a pretty complicated thing, so you have to get even smaller. And the thing scientists agree was even smaller is the first protein. And what a protein is an ordered set of amino acids. So when you're talking about the first life, you have to go that far back and look at – and so when people say the prebiotic soup, mm-hmm. that's what they're saying was in the prebiotic soup was amino acids. That's the starting point for evolutionary biology. is that prebiotic soup. And so when I'm talking about these three theories, that's really the starting point.
Okay.
So chance hypothesis says the prebiotic soup, so you have this ocean of amino acids. By the way, there are 20 amino acids that create the proteins within all human cells. So that's the material you're starting with is those 20 amino acids. There's actually many more, but only 20 of them exist in cells. So the chance hypothesis is in that prebiotic soup, they're all bouncing around together, and you get the first two to click together in a way. They would kind of have some sort of a magnetic attraction. And then the next one would come, and the next one, and the next one. And so scientists, through their experiments, have determined that to get the first functioning protein. And so what they've done is they've taken proteins they found in cells, and I mean, they're super complex things, and they start knocking things out of them. So you might have a protein with several thousand amino acids that create it, and they start knocking these amino acids out to see, okay, will it function if I take this away? Will it function if I take this away? So they don't know exactly at how small they can get it, but there's a working theory in science right now that if you can get that protein down to 150 amino acids, that's the very smallest unit of protein that you can possibly have, that it can still perform a function. And when I say function, I mean it's literally that. Like a protein within a cell might perform the function of a hammer, which is crazy to think about. There's actually tools inside your cells that do things, and they're folded amino acids into proteins that do things like a hammer. There's also one, by the way, that has legs and walks along a highway inside your cell, which is creepy to think about. Yeah. I have things walking around in my cells. So that's where they're starting. Okay, so we have this 150 amino acid protein. That's the genesis. That's the biogenesis that we have to have. So chance hypothesis, that 150 amino acid protein formed by accident. Necessity says some law-like force, like maybe it was gravity and heat and some magnetic force clicked those 150 amino acids together to create the first protein. Or and of course the third one, no, an intelligent designer actually put those 150 proteins together. And so what a lot of people say, and a lot of people in your camp are saying, is, okay, but that's not science. Like, chance hypothesis is science, and the necessity hypothesis is science. Intelligent design is not science. I disagree. So in all
let me throw this in. Sure. I would disagree too, because although you can't prove a negative, I mean, you can't just exclude something because you don't like it. Thank you.
We all had friends and family that were affected by the car fire. Most of the cleanup is done now, and a lot of families are looking at rebuilding. If you relied on a well for your water system, it's important to assess the condition of your well and its capabilities to be able to meet the demands of new construction codes. I'm Ted Ogilvie with Diamond Core Drilling. We've been providing water well systems and pumps in Northern California since 1980. Let us help you with your rebuilding process. That's Diamond Core Drilling, 275-8162.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name, knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
The Reading Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to readingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. Grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee. Snacks and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to readingcivic.com to learn more.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. You're listening to Jake Hinton right here on Radio Wasteland as we discuss intelligent design.
Going all the way back, and I'm going like back to the 1600s, 1700s, scientific philosophies, they compare inductive reasoning to abductive reasoning, or historical sciences to theoretical sciences and experimental sciences. So, for example, the guy who determined that there were invisible wavelengths of light. He literally had light come in. He's measuring the energy because, like, the sun shined into his lab. He measures the energy. Then he puts a prism there in front of that beam of light. Now he's broken the light into all the different spectrums, and he's measuring the energy and says, gosh, there's energy missing. He puts a thermometer outside of that visible light and measures energy there. So he's just discovered an invisible spectrum of light. And, of course, there's one on the other side. It's infrared and ultraviolet. But that's just a really perfect example of someone doing an experiment in their lab, making a discovery, and that's a very repeatable thing, right?
Sure.
Once he writes about it and publishes it, then other scientists around the world can read that and do the exact same thing and say, yeah, you're right. There is really energy on both sides of my light spectrum. So that's a valid discovery. So I get these confused, but I think that's the abductive reasoning. So you've just done science in your lab. It's a repeatable experiment. You know how to do it. But then there's something else that the historical sciences really depend on. And just to give you an example of that, we believe that the dinosaurs went extinct due to a meteor strike on the Earth. We cannot recreate the meteor strike that we're referring to in a laboratory. We can't run the experiment over and over again. We can't, you know, do anything like, there's no experiments. All we can do is say, well, we know that a meteor strike would create a certain uniform ash layer on the Earth. We also know that, you know, based on the fossil record we're seeing, we think that most of the dinosaurs died at approximately the same time. So what could have happened? So we see that effect and we think, okay, what are all the things that could happen? Well, there could be a gigantic forest fire. There could be a meteor strike. There could be volcanic stuff, some cataclysmic thing. But when we look at all the evidence, only one thing really matches all the evidence, and that is the meteor strike. Part of that is the fact that there's a big crater on, like, the Yucatan Peninsula or something,
right,
which they believe was the actual strike. And, of course, volcanic eruptions.
The layer of ash in the strata, and they put it together, right.
Exactly. And so, but you could also say, well, look, a volcano might also make a layer of ash. That's true. The volcano accounts for one of the things we see, but the meteor strike accounts for a lot more of the things we see. Mainly that giant crater we see. A volcano would not create that. A
right.
meteor would. So that's called inference to the best explanation. You've got several things that it could be, but only one thing really explains it well.
Hence the deductive, like Sherlock Holmes, and the abductive would be the repeatable science.
There's three. Abductive, inductive, and what was the third one you said?
Deductive.
Deductive, yeah. So Sherlock Holmes, deductive, abductive and inductive are the two that we're referring to, and I honestly always get them mixed up.
No, I don't blame you.
Yeah. So when you consider that, so when we consider the fact that first of all, there's two different kinds of sciences.
Mm-hmm.
There's the ones you can do in the lab, and then there's the reference to the best explanation. What we're looking at here
is reference to the best explanation.
Reference to the best explanation, yeah. So now you've got those three theories, and you know the kind of science you have to use going forward. So let's take a look at the three theories again. And so I kind of want to apologize for going into this, but it has to happen.
Okay.
It's the only thing I can do. So once... And I'll get there in a sec. So once Darwin created the origin of once he wrote the origin of the species, what he was saying was that natural selection is the reason we see evolution in all the species on the Earth today. What he didn't go into was the book was never written for the first life, the origin of life. He was talking because remember, in order for the changes to occur, there has to be generations.
Mm-hmm.
So natural selection chooses the best out of the generation to send forward. Well, the first life couldn't have had a past generation. So Darwinian evolution doesn't speak to the first life. And Darwin himself says that very clearly. Like, look, and he wrote this in that, what was it, 1850, I think?
It was
1850.
Know.
Yeah, he published it in 1850. He says right there, look, you really, science today cannot speak to anything within the cell. It cannot speak to the origin of life. All I can speak to today is what I can observe. And what he was observing was, you know, the animals he saw on Earth and the changes that he saw in those animals over generations. So let's go to the chance hypothesis for the first life, which is the one of the reasons why I've decided that the intelligent design hypothesis is the winner.
Mm-hmm.
So before I start this, I need to make a reference to the numbers I'm going to be going over. So I'm going to be using numbers that are 10 to the power of,
mm-hmm.
and to give you an example of that, there are 10 to the power of 80 elementary particles in the observable universe. So 10 and then a little hypertext 80. which is 10 times 10 times 10 times 10 times 10,
80 times. Right.
Yeah. So elementary particles, that's electrons, neutrons, protons. There are 10 to the 80th power elementary particles in the observable universe. So how do you calculate the chance hypothesis? Well, if to do this, we need to start by that first 150 amino acid protein, but there's 20 different amino acids that could click in any one place. And they don't actually click together in any order. In fact, they readily click together in any order. They don't care. There's no preference in the way they click together. So the chance hypothesis states that if there's enough of them banging against one another over enough time, then surely it's bound to happen.
Sure. Like the idea of taking a box of puzzle pieces and hucking them on the ground and it building a puzzle.
Yeah, or like a yacht. If you roll the dice enough time, you're going to get a Yahtzee. Right. So all we're looking for, all we're doing is creating a bigger Yahtzee game. So to calculate out, there's a scientist, what the hell? I don't remember the scientist's name. Bill Dembski, that's who it was. So Bill Dembski is a mathematician and a scientist, and he decided he would just calculate all this out. I mean, why not?
Sure.
But there's a problem, and a lot of people have done this before him, like a lot of people, and the problem everyone runs into is they create this calculation, and then people say, well, yeah, but you didn't really factor in this. What if this? What if that? And that usually occurs after someone has said, you know, we calculated the mass of the prebiotic soup on Earth. Mm-hmm. Well, to avoid those arguments, he just gave the chance hypothesis the best possible chance ever. And here's how he did it. He decided he would make every elementary particle in the observable universe something that could help create that 150 amino acid protein. And then he said, let's just assume they were all moving at the speed of light to give them the maximum number of interactions with each other. And yeah, so how would we calculate all of that out? And so what he said was there have been 10 to the 16th power seconds from the Big Bang to today. And there are 10 to the negative 43rd seconds, or rather, a single event can't take place faster than light can traverse that smallest measurable unit of distance. That's the thing that I explained a second ago. So the unit of distance, that's called the Planck length, and it's 10 to the negative 33rd power of centimeters. So the time it takes light to traverse that is 10 to the negative 43rd seconds. So knowing all this, you can multiply the three factors. So the number of elementary particles in the universe, 10 to the 80th power, times the number of seconds since the Big Bang, 10 to the 16th power, times the number of interactions that could possibly occur in each second, 10 to the negative 43rd power. So if you calculate all of those together, the total number of events that could have taken place in the observable universe is 10 to the 139th power. And a lot of people have come up with this. It wasn't just Bill Dembski. Different people always come up with different numbers, but they're all about the same. They're all very restrictive. 10 to the 139th power is such an astronomical number, it's almost impossible for a human brain to think about.
Thank you.
SST Oil on Windham Lane in Reading, your source for specialty fuels and oils, including kerosene and low-sulfur fuel oil. They feature Toyotomi heating systems and on-demand water heaters. Save $100 on a new Toyotomi home water heater and ask about special savings for residents affected by the car fire. Locally owned SST Oil, supporting the community through summer fires and winter snows. Stay warm and cozy with Toyotomi and SST Oil. 241-1167. 241-1167.
Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision. Thankfully, it appears that Coachmaster Repair is an essential business and fully prepared to repair any minor or major damage to your vehicle. With the invasion of the coronavirus, Coachmaster is taking all precautions for the safety of our employees and our customers. We have closed all traffic through our lobby to ensure proper social distancing and will be disinfecting your vehicle upon arrival and before delivery. With the effects and response from the virus, we feel fortunate to be able to maintain all of our employees. They will be here to provide all services required for a proper and complete repair. These are uncharted territories. Let's all work together for a full, safe, and prosperous recovery. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us. You're listening to Jake Hinton right here on Radio Wasteland as we discuss intelligent design.
Remember, like I said, elementary particles is 10 to the 80th power, right? So we're several times more than the most elementary particles in the observable universe. And so, but remember, we're assuming there's other things. And by the way, that's called the statistical resources. Those are the resources that it has to create this thing. So we're wondering, okay, that number, great. That's a really giant number that no one really understands. No one can really comprehend that number. What does it mean for the chances of 150 amino acid protein occurring at any point in the universe? So you can calculate that out too. And so what you're calculating is the chance of the chance hypothesis. So let's assume that the chance of the chance hypothesis being better than 50-50. So if I were to flip a coin, I got a 50-50 chance of it landing on heads or tails. So let's say I want a better than 50-50 chance of something happening. The calculation is that the universe would have to rebuild itself 1 trillion trillion times to give itself the opportunities to have a decent chance at creating that 150 amino acid protein. So we've gone through one game, but we need to play a trillion trillion games to have a good chance of creating that first 150 amino acid protein. So that being said, there is something in statistical science called an exclusion zone. So we've all seen the bell curve, you know, and like the peak of the bell is the thing that's most likely to happen. And as you go off the edge, those are the things that are less and less likely to happen. So really far out, there's something called an exclusion zone, which is the thing that's so far out that there's really no point in making a calculation out there because it just doesn't make any sense. You can't do it. It would be like measuring how high everyone in a certain town can jump.
Right.
At some point, once you get over 3 or 4 feet, now you've got your outliers, your basketball players who might be able to jump 4 or 5 feet, but you wouldn't say they could jump 40 or 50 feet they die when they land in, but also, you know, that's called an exclusion zone in statistics. Right.
But mathematically or statistically taken outside of the realm of humanness, it's still in the realm of possibility. It's just so far out there that when we're deducing, it basically is cut off.
Yeah. And so when you consider that, the universe having to completely restart a trillion times, and you consider the inference to the best explanation, you have to ask the question, well, is that still the best explanation? And that's kind of where I started making my decision. I should add, like, I haven't thought this way my whole life, by the way. I went to public school. I learned that there's no other thing but evolution. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s and started reading further into it that I saw that not only do a lot of people disagree on this, but actually a lot of scientists, very high up scientists, disagree on this too. In the 1980s, scientists actually gathered the top minds in science, and they're like, hey, how are we going to proceed with this? Because this is really prohibitive to the idea that life arose by chance. Like, so prohibitive that we should probably consider other options. And so, and a lot of scientists agree, like, that number is real, and it's a tough pill to swallow. So suddenly, you've got the chance hypothesis perhaps not being the best explanation, which is the thing we're trying to go for. Then, so do you have any questions about that first? I mean, there was a lot of big numbers, and it's...
No, but I get the idea. You know, we laid it out there that we're dealing with deductive, and there comes a point where you have to exclude ideas, and the term astronomical is normally, like, when you talk about time, you talk about geological time and astronomical time, that the term astronomical is still too small to apply to the size of the numbers that we're dealing with. You know, that these numbers are so large that it's outside of the realm of deduction. Now, you know, I mean, one could easily make the argument like, hey, it's still possible. You know, of course it's still possible, you know, but I do get where you're going with this. But, you know, I guess science would say that you can prove by solely disproving. That's a lot of what deductive reasoning is. But is there any proving?
Is there any proving? No, and that's the crazy thing. You simply cannot go back and prove it. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest. You could say that, hey, you know, you're saying one in a trillion, you know, it's like Lloyd and Dumb and Dumber saying, so you're telling me there's a chance to marry, you know, that comedy.
Yeah, so, right, yeah.
So you can never, and so Mary's like, looks at Lloyd like he's kind of an idiot, but you can never go back and completely disprove. But when you consider what you're giving up to hold on to that, if for me it was just too much. And so as I was making this decision, I was thinking I would totally go the other direction, by the way. And I didn't. I just couldn't possibly, you know, a lot of people say, and on both sides probably, you know, an evolutionist might say, well, a creationist or an intelligent design proponent is being ignorant to the facts. I would say, given that fact, you could say the exact same thing. You're being ignorant to the fact that that's a very tiny thing. And I don't say that, by the way. I mean, frankly, a lot of, like we said earlier, a lot of smart people are on both sides of this.
Yes.
But, for me, I couldn't really come to swallow that pill. And so I just, it was a little bit liberating for me to not have to swallow it, to say, nah, I just can't go with it.
You know, it's interesting because for me, I've always, and I think a lot of people who belong to the religion of science, because by our discussion earlier, the definition of religion, I mean, science is definitely one. We got a set of rules, you know.
There you go, set of rules and clergy.
Right, yeah. I always associated intelligent design with religion. To me, there was no separation between the two. But and obviously, I started out this conversation thinking that. But now that we're here, I get what you're saying. And they are not mutually exclusive. One can believe in one, the other, or any combination of the above.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And I should add, I can't remember if it was Hitchens or Dawkins. Both of them are pretty staunch atheists. And one of them passed away maybe like 10 years ago. But before he passed away, he was pressed on this issue of the likelihood of this happening. And at the end of the conversation, he was like, okay, well, maybe it was just aliens. Like that was his next logical step was to say, well, if it's not chance, then it's aliens, mm-hmm. which is, that's the direction he wanted to go. So, yeah, I mean, who am I to say he shouldn't? He's a smart guy. He was a smart guy too. He passed away, like I said.
Well, sure. Arguably, I mean, maybe the universe is but a cell in a larger petri dish of,
right.
You know, maybe we're some macro versus COVID-19.
Yeah. I've had conversations with people who said maybe to a lot of things. Again, and I think they're fun conversations to have, but inference to the best explanation. And people talk about the multiverse, the bubble bath theory, which is the same as the multiverse theory. That's fine. And physicists are having that conversation today for sure. But really there's zero evidence to support a multiverse theory.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Jake Hinton here on Radio Wasteland as we've been discussing intelligent design. So now, Jake, you can go give your voice a break by yelling at your children.
Yes, and I will.
All right. Well, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you, Chauncey. This was a lot of fun.
Feel like you were missing part of that interview? You were. You can get the whole thing on RadioWasteland.us.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.